you left off last week, we were discussing the Tosfim Bava Kama that observed that Rav Yosef seems to be the one who is always teaching us Targum. Targum Rav Yosef is a phrase that appears many times in Chazal. And the question is there any halachic significance to that? So Tosfos referenced the Yesh Mefarshim that appears in the Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, that there was a very real halachic reason why Rav Yosef was always called upon for Targum, because since Rav Yosef was blind, and it would have been prohibited for him to read the Psukim of the Tanakh Baal Peh, if he would have been learning in the original in Lashon HaKodesh, that would have been a violation of Dvar Shavuch Savi at Arasalim Baal Peh. Therefore, he was forced to learn everything in translation, therefore he became the expert in Targum. And Tosfos rejects it. Tosfos says, no, that's not true. So the reason why Rav Yosef was quoted in Targum was because he happened to have been the one who was expert in Targum. Anyone else could have also been the expert in Targum. Why did Tosfos think that was not a violation of Dvar Shavuch Savi? Tosfos invoked the Gemara in Gittin that says, "Es lasos l'shem eferos v'asecha," that under very, very certain extenuating circumstances, it is actually permissible to, in a sense, violate these isurim of Dvar Shavuch Savi, etc. And again, we have no idea what those circumstances are, and why, what the parameters of that kula are. But Tosfos ultimately rejected the Yesh Mefarshim and saying that it's hard to believe that's the reason why Rav Yosef had to always fall back on the Targum. But the Ikaron, fundamentally, both according to the Yesh Mefarshim and according to Tosfos' rejection of the Yesh Mefarshim, potentially this would be the issue. This would have been the sugya. If not for the kula, for the quirk of Eis Lasos Lashem, this would have been a violation of the Dvar Shavuch Savi at Arash Leom V'al Peh. And we have to take a step back and see, is that really true? Do other Rishonim buy into that very premise? Do other Rishonim believe that the Issur of Dvar Shavuch Savi may not have even been on the radar screen here? This is not even the sugya. We're learning the wrong sugya here. So we spent a lot of time last week talking about, is the Issur of Dvar Shavuch Savi also, the Omer B'Aped, the Rai said, the Rabbanan, the Rai is back and forth. But now we're questioning whether the Yisra exists altogether, or at least in the format that we're discussing it. So this part of the Sugya begins with the 10th of the Maimon Kamos. With Tosas and Masechas Tamura, and Daf Yadal and Mabez raises the question, where this Sugya now leaves the theoretical and now enters into very, very real practical for us every single day. V'yom Tomer, ask Tosfos on the 10th of the Maimon Kamos, Tamur Yadal and Mabez. V'yom Tomer, Heichi Kamrina Mizmorim Al Peh. Says, how in the world do we say Tehillim by heart? Guy gets up and says, Shir Malos, stop, Tvarim Shibuch Sav, Yet Arash Lom Bi Al Peh. The Gemara says in Gittin that whatever is in the text, Rav Tosh Shibuch Sav, you're not allowed to say Bi Al Peh. V'yei Shlomar, Ein Lahakbid Rach Bashikosu B'chumash. So Tosfos suggests that maybe the prohibition of Dvarim Shavuch Savi only applies to Chumash, only applies to the Torah part of Tanakh, doesn't apply to Nevi'im Uksuvim. Now, why that distinction should be so opens up a whole other question for us, but we're not going to get to that until much later on in the sugya. Put this part of the Tosfos in the back burner. It's the next part of the Tosfos that concerns us right now. Amnam Kosher says Tosfos, it's very nice to say that Tehillim and Nach are excluded from this Isser, but the bottom line is we violate this with Chumash also. Kasha Eichi Karita Vayosha Ukriyishma. Says Tosfos, who are we kidding? We say Psukim Baal Peh. We say Psukim even from the Chumash Baal Peh. We say Vayosha Hashem Yomu. We say Kriyishma Baal Peh. The Kohanim Duchen Baal Peh. We say Korbanos Baal Peh. I'll give you a long list of Psukim that people say all the time Baal Peh. What happened to this prohibition of Dvar Shavuch Savi? V'yei Shlomo, says Tosfos, the Ein Lahakbid, Ela B'Dovah Shemotzi Achei Midei Chavasan. Says Tosfos, when do we find that there's a prohibition of Dvarim Shavuch Savi, Yet HaRoshon Yom HaBi'al Peh? That's only true when I want to be Motzi somebody else in a particular mitzvah. But if I'm just simply reading the Pesukah for myself, that was never included in the Yisra in the first place. Why that should be so? Sister Torah, we don't know why. What the deep secret of Tosfos is? But Tosfos claims that when does this Yisra even begin? So the Yisra only starts when I'm being Melti Achim. Therefore, when I'm saying my own Kriyishma, I'm saying my own Bechaz Karnim, I'm saying my own Parsha Kamana, I'm saying my own Vayosha, so that's not considered to be a problem altogether. Where in the world did Tosfos get this from? Is there any source in Chazal for this? Seems to be almost an arbitrary distinction. So if we go back to the Maimon Kamos, back to the first page of the Maimon Kamos. So in the fourth of the Maimon Kamos, the Gemara quotes us a Braisa in the end of Maseches Tainis. The Braisa in Tainis is talking about the setup that they had, Bizman Shebeis Mikdash HaKayim, that we know that the Kohanim and Levim were divided up into different groups, into the Mishmaros. So every week, the Kohanim of that group would go up to the basic mixture to the Avodah, the Levim would go up to the Avodah, and the Yisraelim were also divided into groups. What was the role of the Yisraelim? So Chazal instituted, Zeshav Deraisa, Derabanan, a notion that's called Ma'amados, namely, that it's appropriate that there should be a group of Jews who should go up to Yishalayim every week, and they should be almost like the representatives of Klal Yisrael at the time of that Korbanos HaKorbanos. So what did they do, Lemaisa? So they came, they stood in the basic mikdash for a few minutes, and then would do the rest of the day. So they would have special davening and special learning, and they would fast, and special days. They were like the spiritual representatives of the tzibur that week. So the Chazal instituted special Kriyas HaTorahs for the Anshei HaMaimar. Again, unfortunately, we don't have this anymore, but there was special Kriyas HaTorah for those people who were representing the Jewish people during those days in Yerushalayim. What did they learn? What was the appropriate Kriyas HaTorah? In Yonah D'Yoma. What was in Yonah D'Yoma? It was in the middle of summer, in the middle of winter, in the middle of spring. What was in Yonah D'Yoma? So the Yonah D'Yoma was Briyas HaOlam. They would read Ma'ase Bereishis. Why would they read Ma'ase Bereishis? Because the Torah, the world is standing on Avodas HaKorbanos. We say in the Mishnah Perayavos, one of the pillars of the world is Avodas HaKorbanos. So to highlight the fact that the Korbanos is such a significant part of the Briyas HaOlam, so therefore, they would lay in Dafka the Parshas of Ma'ase Bereishis. So those of you may remember from the beginning of the third Pekah Maseches Megillah that there was a big problem. There was a logistical problem with the laying of Ma'ase Bereishis, that it doesn't break down into the Psukim properly. Because as we mentioned last week, every Aliyah has to have a minimum of three Psukim, and you're not allowed to stop an Aliyah within three Psukim of an end of a Psukha or a Stuma. So just the way the Psukim of Ma'ase Bereishis work out, it doesn't work out right. It's impossible to divide up the Psukim properly. So the Gemara in Maseches Megillah came up with some creative ideas. What do you do when you have to make it's like a math problem. You have to make two Aliyahs out of five Psukim. So what do you do with that? So the Gemara quotes two opinions. One opinion is, you lay 2.5 psukim. Each aliyah gets 2.5 psukim, and that's okay. And the other opinion, the Gemara says, no, you repeat one pasuk. It means one aliyah gets 3 psukim, and then the second aliyah starts from the pasuk that you ended with before, and that gets rid of all the logistical nightmares. So the Gabbai's nightmare is solved with the repetition of a pasuk. So why is that important for us? So the Gemara Megillah says that same solution that Chazal came up with repeating a pasuk is something we do every month on Rosh Chodesh. We have the same logistical nightmare on Rosh Chodesh. There's no way to divide up. You can't turn the psukim of Parshas Rosh Chodesh into four aliyahs. The math just doesn't add up. The only way to do it is to repeat a pasuk. The only time we don't have to repeat a pasuk is Rosh Chodesh Chanukah, like from last week, because there you only have to chop three aliyahs into the Rosh Chodesh part, because you saved the last aliyah for Chanukah. So the only Rosh Chodesh that we don't have that nightmare is on Rosh Chodesh Chanukah. Very often the Bakuri will make a mistake. If a Bakuri is not such a professional on Rosh Chodesh Chanukah, so he'll start the lane, and then he'll start to repeat it. He's so used to the Rosh Chodesh model, so he'll start to repeat the pasuk up again, so you have to correct him. It means that's wrong. The only time you repeat the pasuk is only when you have a Rosh Chodesh, not on Chanukah. So the Gemara Maseches Tainis says that they used to lane in the following way. They said, B'shachris of a Musaf, Nechnasan lebeis haKnesses, V'karn kadech shekarn kol hashana, that in the morning, so they would come into shul on the days of the Maimon, and they would daven and they would lane like regular morning laning. Uve mincha yachi karos alpeh. Whereas it came to mincha time, so it was already tivcha detzibur, it was already late in the day. People were already tired; they were hungry, so they didn't make such a tataram at mincha on the mamados. So rather than having a real formal laning, they wanted a lane, but they wanted to do it a little bit quicker. So just one person would get up and he would just lane it b'alpeh. Instead of taking out a sefer Torah, he would just lane the parasha Ma'ase Bereishis b'alpeh. So I'm Rabbi Yossi. V'chi yachid yachal likros debrei Torah alpeh b'tzibur. Rabbi Yossi says, wow, what kind of story is that? How can you have an individual get up and lane for the tzibur, not out of a sefer Torah? That's not acceptable. Ela kula nichnasim mekornos alpeh karnishma. Rather, Rabbi Yossi says, what did they do? Rather than having one person lane for everybody, so everybody just got together, they all mumbled together. It's like you have to go to Chassidus Shtibbles, Haftarah, the Megillus or something, you know, everybody just kind of reads together. So Rabbi Yosef says that's what they used to do in the Maimon and Mincha time. Rather than one Balkaire, they would have just, everybody would just lane themselves without a Sefer Torah. So the Vilna Gaon comments in this Gemara, what is Rabbi Yosef talking about? What was Rabbi Yossi's problem, and what was Rabbi Yossi's solution? Rabbi Yossi criticizes the Tanakam and says, no, how dare you let a guy get up and read not out of a Sefer Torah. So the answer is, let everybody get up and read out of the Sefer Torah. What was the problem? What was the solution? So the Gra says, it's very simple. According to this Tosus, the problem was that you can't have one person be Meitzi Achei Midei Chavasan in Kriyas HaTorah Shalom and Aksav, because that would be a violation of the Ram Shabbichsav, Yet HaRosh Shalom Yalpeh. What was the solution? Have everybody read themselves. Because when everybody's reading themselves, so there's no one fellow being melty anybody else, and therefore there's no problem. So the Gra says that Tosus's answer, Maseches Temura, is not just an arbitrary distinction. Oh, Tosus came up with a great idea to defend that practice of saying Psukim Yapeh. It must be we're not Maitzeh Chemi Dechavasa. No, says the Gemara. It's rooted in the Gemara. It has a source in the Gemara itself. That's exactly the pshat in the Sugya in Maseches Tainis. However, notwithstanding what the Gemara is saying, Vedas, this Tosus in Temura, it would appear that our Tosus in Baba Kama doesn't buy into that, because our Tosus is having a very serious discussion about Rav Yosef's learning style. Why did Rav Yosef learn Aramaic? Why didn't he learn in Lashon HaKodesh? So one day Tosfos says, because that would have been a violation of Dvarim Shebichsav. And the other day says, no, it would have been a violation, but it would have been a violation that was justified, because Eis La'asos Lashem would have overridden that violation. According to Tosfos and Temura, according to Tosfos and Temura, that the prohibition is only violated when you're being motzi achemi dechavasim. Who was Rabbi Yosef being motzi? Was he motzi sitting and learning nach by himself? So what kind of being motzi achemi? So you see that Tosfos in Bava Kama doesn't buy in to this idea of being motzi achemi. So notwithstanding the gross riot from the Gemara and Tainis, the Arishonim clearly do not buy into this Tosfos. So the question becomes, what is the Nekudas HaMachlokes? What are they arguing about exactly? Why should we buy into this Tosfos, or why shouldn't we buy into this Tosfos? What's the Svara? It seems to be a very arbitrary Svara. That, well, if you're being Motzi Achayrim, then it's a problem. If you're not being Motzi Achayrim, it's not a problem. What's the Lumdus, what's the Svara for that distinction? And why don't the Tosfos, the Bali Tosfos and Baba Kama, buy into that distinction? So the Chorot is a throwback to what we were talking about already last week. Last week we spent a lot of time trying to figure out whether the Isser of Dvarim Shebichsav, Yet HaRosh Shalom Yalpeh, is a Deraisa, not. What led us to believe that it's a Deraisa are the Psukim. The Gemara in Kittin and the Afsamach derives it from Psukim. What led us to believe that those Psukim are not really Deraisas, it's just an Asmach Tabiyama, or a whole group of Rishonim who put the brakes on the Isser. There was a Tos Yishonim in Yuma that said that, well, if you're stuck and you can't get a Sefer Torah, no problem, do it be up there. The Gemara Megillah seems to say that, the Mordechai Megillah seems to say that, if you're in the middle of Kriyas HaTorah and there's a mistake and you can't stop, so just read it be up there, no big deal. So any Rishon that's taking almost like a very lackadaisical approach to this Isser, whenever you're stuck, don't worry about it, that's a very, very Durabonim type of a mindset. If this would be a Deraisa, all those clues would be very hard to believe. So we weren't 100% clear last week whether this is an Issa Deraisa or an Issa Durabonim. So that Shaila may impact on our discussion. Is this Isser, whatever it is this Isser limited to being Motzi Achayrim, or does this Isser apply even in one's privacy, in one's own home? So if you assume that it's only an Issa Derabanan, we mentioned last week that we have to come up with some really good reason why Chazal made this Issa. You can't just say, well, Chazal just had it in for reading Psukim Yalpeh. There's got to be some rationale, some real agenda that Chazal were trying to pursue to create this Issa. So we mentioned the last week, in the name of the Sefer Yerayim, in the name of Elazar and Mitz, who came with a very, very practical concern. The Sefer Yerayim said that Chazal must have been concerned that if a person is going to get up and start reading psukim to the Hamonam, to the Tzibor, so people aren't going to take this too seriously. That people are going to think that it's a big joke. If he comes in with a text, then they believe that that's what the psukim say. If there's no text in front of him, so they think he's not making up a drush, he's not making up a sermon. Well, it doesn't really say anywhere what he's claiming that it says. So therefore, Chazal made an Issa D'Rabbanan. Make sure to always have a text with you. Make sure to hold a sefer with you when you give, in a sense, when you hand over the psukim. So according to that svara of the Sefer Yerayim, so then it makes a lot of sense why this prohibition only makes sense in a public setting. That means if I'm getting up in shul and I'm reading the Sefer Torah and I'm trying to give the Olam some Divrei Torah of Yisayrus, and they see that I'm my eyes closed and I'm just saying it about Pat, so they're going to snicker, they're going to sneer, they're going to think that the whole thing is a joke. There's nothing really that's written in the text. The rabbi's just making it up. He needs some sermon to make on Shabbos morning. It's not really in the text. But if that's the whole rationale for the Yisra, just a very technical, practical concern about Balabatim, we're going to think the whole thing is a joke, so then Tosfos Temura makes a lot of sense, that B'medev HaMamurim, that's when you're Motzi HaChemi Dechavosa, when there's a public, when there's a Tzibur here. I'm davening myself. I'm saying my own kriyashma, the privacy of my own home. Because one day, say whatever you want. With a text, without a text, what's the difference? The whole reason for the Issa Derabbanan doesn't even get off the ground. So if you go down that route, that we're only dealing with an Issa Derabbanan, and if the Sefer Reim is correct, that the reason for that Issa Derabbanan is rooted in the fact that we're afraid of confusion, we're concerned with people not understanding what's really written and not written, so then I understand why the Issa is limited only to a public setting. But that's a really, really big chiddush. It's a chiddush to say that the Issa is the Rabbanan. To say if you're Reim is a really, really big chiddush, fine, not the majority view in the Rishonim. Is there something more here? Is there some other way of explaining what's going on with this Tos and Tvura, with this Vilna Gaon, with this Gemara and Tainis, that the prohibition is limited only to Derech Tzibor and somehow doesn't apply in a Yachid? What is this about? Maybe there's something deeper here than just saying, well, there's a logistical concern, people are going to make a mistake, it doesn't apply to Derech Tzibor. Is there something much deeper that's playing out here?
It's just a practical question. If you read out of a sitter, is that considered
a ball? Oh, okay, very good. Okay, so I have deliberately been sidestepping that issue by not defining properly what tzav is. The answer to that question is that it's going to be a major machlokes, and it's going to depend ultimately on everything that we're saying in the next couple of days. So eventually, we're going to come back to that. So perhaps we can come up with something maybe even a little bit more lomdish, a little bit more of a hagdara, of a real definition, as to why this Tosfos Maseches Temura, why this Gron, this Gemara Tainis makes a lot of sense. Why this prohibition is limited only to Derech Tzibor and doesn't apply to a Yachid. So if we take a look, skip a couple of the Marmakamos for a moment. I'm going to skip ahead to the 15th of the Marmakamos. It's not one of the regular Marmakamos we put on, but it's a very, very important Marmakam. It's the Hagdama of the Rambam to Mishneh Torah. Recommended highly, Rambam doesn't need my recommendation, but highly recommended reading. If you have about an hour or so, you should read the Hagdama of the Rambam to Mishneh Torah. If you have about 10 hours, then you should read the Hagdama of the Rambam to Perush Mishnayos. The Hagdama of the Rambam to Perush Mishnayos is much, much, much longer. In the Rambam's Hagdama to Mishneh Torah, he makes a tamtzis, he makes a little like a summary almost of what he says in the Hagdama to Perush Mishnayos. But if you have an hour or so, it's very, 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 very kedai reading. So the Rambam, in his introduction to Mishneh Torah, the 15th of the Marmakamos, really goes through the history of Teshuva Peh, gives you a synopsis of what's going on here. He basically begins with a fundamental dilemma, namely that here he's sitting in the 1100s and writing a Sefer. How did we get here? Where did this come from? He's about to write a 14 books of Yad HaChazaka, Mishneh Torah, and he tells you that anything and everything you ever want to know about Teshuva Peh is written here. And now he's kind of like asking himself, well, where did this all come from? So he draws you a timeline going all the way back from Moshe Rabbeinu till today, his day in the 1100s, as to where this all developed from, how we came from Moshe Kibbutz Torah Sinai to the words of the Rambam. So in the middle of this introduction, he addresses the following. He addresses the style of learning and transmitting Torah in the olden days. Says the Rabbi, most Moshe Rabbeinu had Rabbeinu HaKadosh. From the days of Moshe Rabbeinu until the days of Rabbeinu HaKadosh is Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was the one who put together the Mishnah. Lo chibru chibur shem lamdim osa barabim b'teshuvah peh. There was never a chibur, there was never a book that was put together that people would use to publicly teach Teshuva Peh. So the notion of a Mishnah, that now we have a text of Mishnayos, and our person comes to a shiur, and the Rebbe reads a Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi wrote down a Mishnah, now he's reading the Mishnah, he's teaching his Talmidim from a text of Mishnayos, that was a tremendous innovation. That was something that did not exist for hundreds and hundreds of years. What did the transmission of Torah look like? What did the shiurim look like before the actual writing down of the Mishnah? Ella, b'chol dor v'dor, each and every generation, Rosh Beis Din, O Navi Shaiba Osu Ador, Kosev Li'atzmo, Zichron HaShmuos, Sheshama Merba Yisav. So a person is sitting and learning. So let's say, Shmuel HaNavi is sitting and learning. He's a young boy sitting in Shiloh. He's sitting and learning from his Rebbe, from Eli. And Eli's saying a Shia, and he's teaching him about how to Shecht, and he's teaching him about a Choshab, he's teaching him about how to build a Sukkot, how to build a Mikvah, and Tum V'tar, and come on. All the Teshuva Peh, what's Shmuel doing at that point? So the Rambam describes, he's taking notes. He's writing down the Zichron HaShmuos. Well, otherwise, how's he going to remember everything? It's impossible. So he remembers, he's sitting down and writing down all the things that he learned from his Rebbe. Now, that's a striking statement of the Rambam, because we have this conception, or according to the Rambam, misconception, that anything and everything was Baal Peh. Until the days of Ibn Anas, nobody picked up a pen. So the Rambam says that's not true. The Rambam at least claims that's not true. That there was very much writing going on from day one. In the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, there was already writing going on. Everybody was writing, Zichron HaShemo Shashom Rabbeisav. So what changed in the days of Ibn Anas? What do we mean when we call Toshav Baal Peh? V'malamed al peh berabim. What the Rambam says is that when it came time to transmit the Torah to the next generation, he did not walk into Shia with notes, with Marim Karmas. He would transmit everything as Torah Sheva Al Peh. Unlike the Torah Shebichsav, that there was a written text, and he sat with his Tamidim and he read, Bereishis Barakim, Bereishis Barakim. When it came to the Torah Sheva Al Peh, it was not transmitted from the notes that were taken. The notes were a personal guide to help him not to forget. But in terms of the presentation of Torah to the next generation, was done Al Peh Barabim. V'chein the Rambam continues, kol echad v'echad kaisiv li'atzmo kifi kocho mibira Torah u'michosek moshe shama. Each and every person would write according to their own ability from the interpretation of the Torah, of the halachas that he had heard. The Rambam here is referencing something that we spoke about in the past, that the Rambam divides up Torah Sheva Peh into different categories. There are the halachas, like the halacha Moshe Mesinai's, and the Perush of Kubal Mesinai, all the things that he had heard directly from his Rebbeim. So all those things were written down in each and every generation for, as individuals. And not only did they write down those actual halachas that they had received, ish b'piyish ad Moshe Rabbeinu, umidvarim sheneschatshu b'chol dor v'dor, b'dinim shelo lomdu b'piyash shmua. Even those things that they didn't have an absolute tradition on. Remember we spoke about this, we spoke about halacha Moshe Mesinai and hilchas gemirila, that the halacha Moshe Mesinai were the things that were transmitted, ish b'piyish ad Moshe Rabbeinu, that was never a machloikes. My Rebbe taught me how to shecht, my Rebbe taught me how to keep Shabbos, my Rebbe taught me how to build the mikveh, my Rebbe taught me how to make tefillin, how to make sukkah. All the Torah Sheva Peh, all the Birkah mitzvah that we have. So this was all written down as individuals. And in addition to that, all the new things that came up. All of a sudden, in this generation, we came up with a Shaila. Should we make this Kavacham or not make this Kavacham? Should we darshan this Hekesh or not? Should we make this Memetzin or not? All the things that were Nischadish in each and every generation. Anything that was discussed and decided upon by the Beis and Agadol was written down. Of course people wrote it down. They didn't write it down. How in the world are they going to remember it? This is the way Torah was learned until the days of Ibn Anasi. Rabbi Danasi collected all of this information. You're talking about a wealth of information. You're talking about over 1,000 years of discussions of both those parts of Torah that were Ish B'Pish and Meish Rabbeinu, as well as those things that were Nischatshu B'chol Dor V'Dor. That was all put together, and that all became the basis of the Mishnah. So when we read a simple Mishnah, the Mishnah is not just the work of one person in the year 200 to the Common Era. It's a culmination of 1,400 years, 1,500, 1,600 years of discussions and traditions and messiahs that have been around since the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. And that became the background to the Mishnah. And what did he do with this Mishnah? V'shanu l'chacham b'rabim. Now's where the change, now's the innovation. He begins to teach this Mishnah b'rabim. He begins to use a written text to transmit Torah. V'nigla l'chol Yisrael. It became revealed to the entire Jewish people. V'chasvu kulam. People started to make copies of the Mishnayas. V'ravtzu b'chol makom. And now this became prevalent. This became the standard text of learning. Kadesh lo tishtakach Torah Sheva Peh b'Yisrael. So this way, because it was put into writing in a public setting, it became a standard, uniform text that enabled that Torah would not be forgotten. And then, of course, all discussions from then on began to revolve around the Mishnah. That's why the whole Talmud Yerushalmi was the parish of the Amoraim in Eretz Yisrael to the Mishnah. The Talmud Bavli was 200 years later, was the parish of the Amoraim in Babel to the Mishnah. Everything that we do today, we sit and we learn the Gemara, because the Gemara is the parish on the Mishnah. So, in effect, everything boils down to the Mishnah. The bottom line is everything starts with the Mishnah, and everything's extended. The Gemara is the parish on the Mishnah, the Rishonim are parish on the Gemara, the Achronim are parish on the Rebbe. So it all becomes bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, but everything ultimately finds itself in the Mishnah itself. So now the Rambam says, V'lama asur b'ed ha-kodesh kach? Why did Rabbi Nasi do this? Why didn't he just leave things as they were? That let everybody write down the private notes and teach Torah, b'rabim, b'al peh, like the way it was in the old days. because he realized that the numbers of Tamidim were diminishing. And he saw that the situation politically was not, didn't look too promising. It was already after the Churban, and the Romans had already had some very serious persecutions and decrees against Klal Yisrael. This was already after the days of the destruction of Beit Tar, after the burial of Bar Kokhba, after Rabbi Akiva, after the Sar of Gamalchus. We know he lived at a time which had a very, had seen very, very big troubles for Klal Yisrael. And he saw that the Roman Empire was spreading, which by said spread throughout Kimat the entire world. And he saw that the Jewish people were dispersing, which is exactly historically Rambam's describing exactly what was going on. That the Jewish community was no longer centralized in Eretz Yisrael and not even completely centralized in Babel anymore. There were already Jewish communities that were in North Africa, there were Jewish communities in Yemen, there were Jewish communities that were beginning very soon to crop up in Europe and in Spain and in France and Germany. So within the next couple hundred years, the Jewish communities would be completely dispersed. And Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, he understood history, he understood what the cycle of history was, and he saw what was going to happen, and therefore he decided that the only way to preserve everything for the last 1400 years was to put it into print. And that became Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's, his goal in life, was to write the Mishnah and to compile the Mishnah and to transmit the Mishnah bir rabim. That was the reason why he changed what he said. The Rambam just gave you the entire historical background of Eis Lassos Hashem Eferus Orsecha. That means it was such a Shas Avchak that whatever potential problem of writing down Tosh Rav that was had to be pushed aside because of the concern of Shevetish Tachachatar in Yisrael. So this fascinating insight into the Rambam, something that many people don't realize, at least the Rambam presentation, that there very much was writing down of Torah Shabbat beforehand. It just wasn't transmitted, b'tzibur, until the Chiddush of Rabbi Danasi. It's this presentation of the Rambam that may impact on our discussion. At first glance, this discussion doesn't seem to have anything to do with that discussion. We're talking about saying Torah Shabbat Baal Peh, and the Rambam is talking about writing down Torah Shabbat Peh. So the answer is they're two sides of the same coin. So if we understand why the Rambam said what he said, why the Rambam was okay, even in the old days, with writing down Torah Shabbat Peh, as long as you don't give it over to somebody else, in that state of Bechsav, if we really understand what the Rambam's talking about, then maybe we'll be able to understand what Tosfos Tavur is talking about as well. Why Dvarish Bechsav, Yapeh Bechsav, is not a din of the Yochid, it's a din of the Tzibor. It's a din of the Rambam. The question is, what does that mean? What kind of words? What does that mean? So hopefully that's the next year, we'll have to go back to this Rambam and just finalize what the Rambam is talking about, and then use this Rambam back as a springboard to understand what the Bira Dov and the Tosfos Tavur is talking about. So that's Shem on Wednesday.